Sean Phillips is a musician whose albums from the 70s are beloved by their fans for the scope and depth of the writing and music. The Texas-based singer-songwriter recorded for A&M Records and lived around the globe. He now makes his home in Port Elizabeth, South Africa. On a rare trip back to the U.S., he joined us in the cafe studio, and I asked him about the longevity of his career, and he replied that it's really no surprise to him.
I never write from imagination. I always write. There are four criteria that I use when I'm writing: experience, anger, wonder, and technique. The experience goes without saying. The anger, if you look around at the world around us, if you're satisfied with it, then you're probably certifiable. Wonder, to be attentive to every drop of rain on every unfolding bud. And technique. Technique is keeping a balance between the anger and the wonder. And you combine that, and then the one other thing that really aspires and inspires me is just simply joy. When we're born into a state of ecstatic wonder. We're not predators. We don't need to survive from the moment we're born. We're born into a state of ecstatic wonder, and that stays with us for the rest of our lives. I mean, society makes us build up walls, and we kind of lose touch with that. But there are myriad ways and pathways to get back to that, but it never leaves. And that's what I use to create the music I create.
Now, you name all those elements. Has the ascendancy of any one of those changed over the years? Because doing what you've been doing as long as you can, I could imagine the sense of wonder eroding, and the sense of anger perhaps rising. Has that been the case?
Well, actually, the wonder grows in direct proportion with the anger. Is really what's kind of going on. You just you see what's going on in the world, and it's a little scary. I mean, we got 3,000 or 4,000 people, extremely wealthy people, that run the world, and they don't care about humanity. You know, they don't care whether our children go forward or not. And we need to neutralize them. We need to put them out of business, as it were. And we do that by finding a center of peace within ourselves. And because when one individual finds peace, the world finds peace. And that's what I try and do in all the music that I write. I say, okay, here's one path to that direction. Here's another one.
Well, you've got the Nylon 6 out, and what do you want to begin with?
Radio. I thought that might be the proper song, too, because you guys are the antithesis of what this song is about. The song's called Radio. Why should I write a melody that'll bring you joy and make you free? Talking about the way you love, the ups and downs and all the rough. Using my voice to tell you tales, I try to describe the ocean gales, or making a plea for sanity in a cracked up world of vanity. What is the point of something new, apart from the fact it's just for you? You can be sure you'll never know or hear it on the radio. Out of your mind to let them say what you want to hear be played today. Why don't you let them know that you're dismayed? Why should I make myself a jerk and keep on doing this arduous work of writing the songs that no one will hear unless they are in the room so near? I never did what I thought was soap, a graph on a chart with an upward slope to make some attorney think he's real. Gotta go through him to make the deal. What is the point of something new, apart from the fact it's just for you? You can be sure you'll never know or hear it on the radio. Out of your mind to let them say what you want to hear be played today. Why don't you let them know that you're dismayed? A song is a work that'll last for time. It's more than a chant or just a rhyme. You have to be able to learn to sing, and that takes years of practicing. I don't give a dit what, and I'll be blunt. A turntable's not an instrument. Controllable idiots all in a row, faking you out with their playback show. What is the point of something new, apart from the fact it's just for you? You can be sure you'll never know or hear it on the radio. Out of your mind, or let them say what you want to hear they play today. Why don't you let them know that you're dismayed? Corporate greed is major cage. You gotta break out and act your age. You listen to music that's only true, or you'll never know what it does for you. Giving your money for nothing of worth to shallower people of dubious birth, who don't give a damn for human minds. Just lining their pockets is all that's right. What is the point of something new, apart from the fact it's just for you? You can be sure you'll never know or hear it on the radio. Out of your mind, and let them say what you wanna hear be played today. Why don't you let them know that you're dismayed?
John Phillips is our guest today, and that's a song on Living Contribution, his new half live album, half acoustic. And what's interesting about it is, of course, if you're a fan of Sean, you know the Contribution has been a big word on all three albums with that in the title. Yes. And then collaboration and so many over the years. Yeah. And kind of a reminder, because a lot of the songs on here are some of your older material. Yeah. As well. And you have a song that I think a lot of people know, but they don't know the title of, because it's so damn long. Which is one it's called Woman.
It's called Woman, but the actual true title is She Was Waiting for Her Mother at the Station in Torino, and You Know I Love You, Baby, But It's Getting Too Heavy to Laugh. And the story behind that is when I lived in Italy, I was living with an English actress at one point named Francesca Annis. And there was this young girl who was an Italian runaway, and she would come to our house, and we'd feed her, and she'd sleep on our floor, then she'd go to somebody else. We were a community of expats, Germans, French, Italians, English, and so forth. And we just got fed up, because we didn't have any money either. And so we pooled what we had. We bought her a train ticket to go back to her hometown of Torino. And we took her to the station in Naples at about 8 o'clock in the morning. She got on the train. At 11:30 that night, I got a call. We were all sitting around in the Bar Internazionale in Positano. And I got a call, and the bartender, Pasquale, says, it's for you. And it's her, and she's in tears. La mamma non sta qui, non so che devo fare, and my mother's not here, I don't know what to do. And at that precise moment, she saw her mother enter the train station. And she said, sta bene, okay, everything's all right, my mother's here. So therefore, she was waiting for her mother at the station in Torino, and You Know We Love You, Baby, But It's Getting Too Heavy to Laugh. So that's the story behind that.
Now Positano, if people were to go to live in Positano nowadays, mm-hmm. they couldn't possibly afford to be the struggling artist and live there as you were.
No.
And you were able to do all this. In fact, you ended up in a lot of the right places at perhaps the right time. Yes. In New York City, out in California, you spent time in London. Yes. Were you just used to all this traveling, or were you actually looking for musical scenes, or how did that work out?
No, I wasn't really looking. It was just more of a finding yourself in a particular situation. I mean, I got out of the Navy in 61, and I went out to California and met Tim Hardin. Tim, we hung out there for 3-4 months, and then he said, let's go to New York. So we went to New York and stayed there for 3 or 4 years. And then about 1965, I think I went to England. But that's because I had been working out of New York, and I had been up into Toronto. And I was playing a club called the Purple Onion at that time, and I had a night off, and somebody said, go see this guy Ravi Shankar. he plays an amazing instrument. And I saw him play the sitar. He, backstage, he sat me down for 2.5, almost 3 hours, and showed me the basics of how to play the instrument. I got a hold of the sitar, and it just started from there. And I continued to work. I worked with Donovan and George Harris and on all those different people. I taught George the basics on the instrument, and then he went on later to study under Ravi. And that's how I ended up in England, because I was actually on my way to India to study sitar. And I got waylaid by Dennis Preston, who said, who heard me sing at a party and said, do you want to make an album? And I ended up making two albums for Lansdowne Columbia there.
And you also had, you moved in with your roommates, who ended up being a man named Leach, Donovan Leach. And then this other guy who was wandering over from New York City needed a place to crash.
Paul Simon.
That was Paul. But the interesting thing I find about this, because everybody's kind of interested about these stories, was at the time, they were just other musicians.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, you know, I was in Abbey Studios when they were recording A Day in the Life and Lovely Rita, and I sang backup on Lovely Rita. And you don't think about the fact that you're making musical history. You're just a bunch of guys hanging out. That's all that was happening at that time. You're just a bunch of people hanging out there.
And now, you did not continue with the sitar seriously, just because it would. How do you possibly master that instrument?
You actually, nobody ever masters it. I mean, you get to a point to where you're fairly proficient on it, but to master that instrument, you need to learn all the different tunings, because they have morning ragas, they have evening ragas, afternoon ragas, and you need to learn all those different tunings, because what people don't know is that the sympathetic strings along underneath the strings that you play, you tune those sympathetic strings to the melody that you're going to play. Therefore, when you hit the notes in that melody, those strings will sound sympathetically. And I just never really got there. I got so hung up in making records and working with Don and so forth. So I stayed there until 1967. And on July the 7th, the English government said to me, your work permit has expired and you need to leave the country because you're taking work away from a British musician. And I said, what's his name? They didn't think that was very funny. But I had to leave, and I had a friend named Casey Dice who said, go to Positano, stay for the 3 months, and then come back and get another work permit. I got there on July the 7th, 1967. I didn't move until 1980.
Wow. Sean Phillips is our guest, and but so many directions to go with songs. What would you like to do next?
I'll do a song that I like. This song is called Coming Down Soft and Easy. Tell a tale of married men, of simple shells and courage, and falling through the world of a windy day. Serpent coils and hydrofoils, you don't believe what it does with oils. Speaking words that he said once yesterday. And peaches are predominant, peace has got no counterpoint. Peter said he had to go nowhere away. But could it be a grand joke, a puff of smoke? Yes, it but a great day to know the way. Don't you see the huge clouds go flying by? Don't you know deep down we all are butterflies? Just you take another look around at what you've been seeing. What's been running through your mind is all we have at all. Have you been to the Tinker's Ball, waiting for the light to come again? Here we were sitting on a rooftop looking at the planets. Have you looked out there? Today is like tomorrow then. A little scared of the affairs of men. Everybody also knows that they're afraid, 'cause they are frightened by a love, a life of everybody. Terrified by the thought of
Unity is probable. Vanity is escapable. Violence, the workings of a tortured mind. And waterbeds are really fun. Sleeping in the baking sun. Debbie's disappointed, but I think she knows it's right. And jellyfish are dangerous. And politics are perilous. And I'm really glad that I'm not Bush's friend. 'Cause I say sexual repression can make a lot of trouble. It can only lead to craziness is in the head. The heart is short of being dead. Have you got a reason for survival in the fall? Oh, look at blood-soaked Charlie on a silk-stained bedsheet. Can you tell me, do you really want to die in all your false belief? I tell you now that there is no relief. Oh, we really gotta grow again. 'Cause I say psychosomatic delusions are before you. Better dig it now before becoming in memoriam. Could it be a grand joke, a puff of smoke? Yes, it's been a great day to know the way. Don't you see the huge clouds go flying by? Don't you know deep down we all are butterflies?
Anger, Wonder, Technique, it's all in there. That's another one of the new songs from our friend Sean Phillips is here today. That's coming down soft and easy. You mentioned wanting to do one that was based on a story.
A book.
A book, yeah.
Yes. I have a friend named Luis Alberto Urrea. I got to tell you this story. I opened for the Moody Blues years ago. This young man runs up to the front of the stage, hands me a book. Now, you know you can buy books that are already bound with blank pages. He had filled this book with short stories, poems, cartoons, The Adventures of Cowboy Cat. Cowboy Cat was a cowboy hat with a tail out from underneath it. In the ensuing years, he sent me two more books. They were very good. Everything was wonderful in them. In the third book, he put his phone book, a phone number. I was living in Italy. At that time, it took 2 hours to call the United States. I call him, picked him up. Phone rings. He answers, Luis Urrea. Luis Urrea, please. This is he. Hi, Luis. This is Sean Phillips. And he threw an epithet at me and said, that ain't funny, and hung the phone up. So 2 hours later, I get him back. Dude, don't hang the phone up, man, you know. And we became very good friends. I introduced him to my father, who was one of those authors that never received a rejection slip for anything he ever wrote. Luis would write something, he would critique and send it back, and he went on, became the youngest person ever to teach expository writing at Harvard.
Yeah.
And he is now a multiple award-winning author. His latest work is called The Hummingbird's Daughter, which is a gigantic epic of humanity about this woman named Teresa who lived during the 18th century in Mexico. She was a spiritual healer, and she empirically documented, healed hundreds of thousands of people. So it's a book about her life from her birth to her death. And the book just previous to that is a book called The Devil's Highway. The Devil's Highway is an area between Mexico and Arizona that is just no man's land. It is a forbidding landscape, and people try and come through into the United States through this place. The Devil's Highway is a book about 26 people who tried to come through this way, and the coyotes that were leading them got lost, and 14 people died of exposure in the desert. Luis spent 6 years researching this book. He went to everybody, the good guys, the bad guys, everybody. He put himself in some places that was actually not, should not have been. And the book came out, and it just inspired me so much that I had to write a song called The Devil's Highway. And this is The Devil's Highway. I have not forgotten that there are some misconceptions in the tragedies we see throughout our lives. The wailing of the mothers and the ramrod pride of stature in the fathers as they learn about the lies. The ugly perpetration of a dollar as incentive as they went towards the last days of their lives. Led by human beings who were caught up in the circle and all they really want's a better life. Down the devil's highway, we won't see them when they're falling. We only find them when their bones are bleaching white. No absolution for those families that have lost them. They keep a vigil in the dark of every night. They live the horror of those journeys in their visions. The blackened bodies that were fast becoming ripe. And in the end, their sad discovery that that highway that they were seeking was not all the brightest light. We gnash our teeth and wring the hands of our contrition. We make the promises to change this vile condition. While bugs and predators, they leave the minute traces. The politicians are concerned with their high places. Trailers, they can't see the sky emblazoned with the majesty of God's colossal fire. Night and day they travel to El Norte from a hovel in the hopes that they believe they'll soon be hired to feed their wives and children who are trapped inside a prison without the chance to rise up any higher. In their country they've forgotten, they're considered misbegotten, and their leaders just increase the cost of wire. Into desolation they began with trepidation. Were they concerned at all with anyone to blame? The corporate powers that would fund their meager hours. Did any one of them know this is just their game? No value to existence, they insist in their persistence that the money was achieved without the shame. The scorching sun had soon undone with little life was left alone. And in that state they just forgot their names. And now we haggle over intellect collisions. We have to find the time and make the right decisions. Seemingly incapable, it leaves us inconsolable. We have to gravitate toward the light. Now we must remember that the cause of this attrition is the selfishness we all want to deny. We speak in different languages that magnify the anxiousness for some that will not really ever fly. We are frightened of our brothers, convinced that they're the others, chilling out with only our own kind. That's the tragic station, we're this planet's only nation, and if we're not, then surely we will die. Down the devil's highway, we won't see them when they're falling. We only find them when their bones are bleaching white. No absolution for those families that have lost them. They keep a vigil in the dark of every night. They live the horror of those journeys in their visions. The blackened bodies that were fast becoming ripe. And in the end, their sad discovery that that highway that they were seeking was not all the brightest light. We gnash our teeth and wring the hands of our contrition. We make the promises to change this vile condition. While bugs and predators, they leave the minute traces. The politicians are concerned with their high places.
Sean Phillips with the Devil's Highway. And what does Luis think of the song from the book?
He loves it. The last tour 2 years ago was a fairly short tour, about a month and a half, 2 months. And I wanted to hook up with Luis. And I said, well, there's a friend of mine that lives in Arizona. He's an astronomer named Michael Schwartz. And Michael he's visited us in South Africa, and he wanted me to visit him. And because of his book schedule and my schedule, it didn't look like it was going to happen. But on the phone, I said, well, I'm flying out to Tucson. And he said, I'm leaving for Tucson tomorrow morning. So we hooked up in Tucson, and I sang the song for him at probably the singular most proper place to sing the song. It was a convention of journalists that are concerned with justice at the border crossings.
Perfect.
I flattened the room, David. I flattened the room, man.
That's great. Now, these, as we say, your tours here in the States are relatively rare, but one should not fear for Sean Phillips, who has a day job in South Africa, which is completely, seemingly different from this.
Yes.
And you're an EMT.
I am a certified firefighter and EMT in the state of Texas. I did that for almost 12 years. I actually quit music for almost 8.
Mm.
And I am currently, when I got to South Africa, I thought, well, what am I going to do with all these skills? And my wife said, go talk to Sea Rescue. So 4 years later, with a great deal of training, I am a rescue swimmer. I just barely made that, by the way. You have to swim 200 meters in less than 4 minutes, and you have to tread water for 20 minutes in 9-foot seas. The treading water, I didn't have a problem with. Swimming to 200 meters, I had about 35 guys, all 20 and 25 and 30 behind me going, this cat ain't going to make it, man. And I made it in 3:53. So I get to jump out of helicopters at 65. But I'm a rescue swimmer, an extrication specialist, and a navigator with the National Sea Rescue Institute in Port Elizabeth.
Now, how often do you end up going out and doing that?
We do that 1 week out of every month. We're on duty.
Mm-hmm.
And there are four crews, and each crew takes 1 week out of each month. But if it's a big call, then everybody's in. You have code green. If you can get here, okay, code orange. We'd like you here, code orange, code red, move your butt. There are imminent danger to human life and or property.
So. Sean, thank you so much for playing live for us.
It's my pleasure.
Sean Phillips is our guest, and we will be back in a moment here on the World Cafe.